Oh, you made it. You're finally here. Welcome to Half Cocktails, a place where we have a great time celebrating science, the social contract, and just plain old congeniality. Dare I say, a place where we seek a path to peace, prosperity, and exploration amongst the stars. What I'm talking about is an all-inclusive society, meaning if you're not on board with the understanding that we all agree to share rules, norms, and respect, we're not obligated to even consider your opinion any longer because the social contract is that important to a civil society. I'm your friend and host, Dan, the worshiping Dionysus man, sipping on some science today. I'd like to welcome any new listeners just joining us. We're here having a good time. We hope you have a good time, too. Stay tuned until the end of the show, where we're going to be discussing a disgusting new trend that lifeguards cannot stand. As always, I am joined by some fine and fascinating folks in lounge today. Today, I'm joined by Amber, my sister who loves the woo-woo and thinks she's always right, too. How are you doing, Amber?
Oh, I'm doing quite well. It is bona tevada, your dolly old eek.
Yes, I understood all of those sounds.
You will. Don't worry. What? We'll have a little lesson.
Oh, you're laying the seeds. I thought you were just like saying some French shit or something. Like, okay, yeah.
Well, interestingly enough, it did... does have some ties
we'll get there. We'll get there. We got a really fun and informative show for you today, brought to you by Bloaty's Pizza Hog. Pizza's so good, you'll wonder what you're really eating. gotta love Bloaty's. We're going to take a quick look back at Amber.
We're going to be talking about a secret slang that was used in Britain. Coded communications.
Secret slang language. Is it still used today? I'm assuming not, because it's a time machine. We got to go back in time to use it, right?
Right. We do have to go back in time, but we're going to... I mean, there's still instances where some of the words have continued right. they persisted. In our vernacular. So, yeah.
Excellent. Okay. We'll be talking about that soon. Coming up, we've got some hot science news. We're going to be talking about sulfur on the surface of Mars that got recently discovered and why that's important. And then we're going to be talking about some archaeology. New paper came out talking about an Aborigine ritual. Aborigine ritual in Australia that's lasted 12,000 years and how they've been able to prove this ritual has lasted 12,000 years, which I always find exciting. We're going to play a rousing rendition of Fact Check in Time involving the CrowdStrike outage, lobsters, and everybody's favorite wacky prophet, Joseph Smith.
Oh, no! And I'm the one in the hot seat!
That's right. I did it just to stump you. And of course, we're going to wrap things up with a feel-good story, and this one's about another person seems to have been completely cured from their HIV. We're going to be talking about that story later in the episode.
Perfect.
We encourage everyone to reach out to us at halfcocktails@gmail.com, or maybe you just want to send us a text or voice message. We got a phone number at 443-499-8253. You can also come drop a comment over on one of our socials, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, all the fun places. Okay. Oh, Amber, we ready to start this shindig? Get that time machine?
We are.
Because I'm giving you the controls of the machine today. here's the keys. I'm going to put on my blindfold because I don't want to, witness the madness.
Yeah. So come on, let's get in, dolly birds and conks. It's a quick zoosh to the mid-1800s. So no bevy service on this jaunt.
Okay, I recognize jaunt. I recognize jaunt. Yes, let's go on a jaunt. All right.
So hop in.
All right.
We're going to take a short
jump to
the 1800s. There's no beverage service, so provide your own, please.
Nothing would be better than a look at days of yester in our time machine.
We are heading to London in the 1840s. So London in the 1840s, just to set our setting.
Okay, so this was just after Jack the Ripper?
Somewhere in there, yeah, along this time. So we've got London, 1840.
Oh, no, Jack the Ripper is 1880. So this is 40 years before Jack the Ripper.
Before Jack the Ripper, yeah. I knew it was around the same.
That's the only way I could tell time in London.
I love it. Well, this time, London represented more of a third world megapolis rather than the city, the bustling city that we come to think of. Most people didn't have.
Okay, so it's like Charles Dickens.
Yes, we are in a Dickensonian London. Lots of people with nowhere to work.
This would have actually been one he was writing, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right.
Yeah, Christmas Carol came out in 1843. Yep. So like orphans working.
Definitely.
And coal mines. So, yeah, full on
shit
world. We are
in Dickens world here. Lots of immigrants, lots of street vendors and street traders. And so at this time, there is a journalist named Henry Mayhew, and he was writing some pieces on the London labor and the London poor, like what was going on in London with the various merchants and how there were just so many poor. So as he was interviewing these different groups of people, he encountered this secret language. At least this is the first kind of recorded instance of someone sharing about this language. So as he's talking,
so this reporter is interviewing people. And they're like, well, you know, Bob's your uncle. And he's like, wait, what?
I think it's just like in the, as he's listening to them talk and the words that they're using, some of them were
like
were
words
slang.
Are coming up where he just doesn't know.
Like, it was a slang. It was. Yeah. So he finds this language, and that's like the first kind of recorded instance of.
He like writes about it
A little bit, not a lot. It's more like because it still was used up until the mid 1900s. And we'll get to that in just a moment. But what was happening is we've got and it wasn't just in London and in Britain. It was throughout the UK. So we've got a time when, of course, homophobia was deeply entrenched in culture.
And yet,
as any historian knows, homosexual activity probably started in the Garden of Eden, and we just don't have it recorded yet. I mean, that's supposition, but it's been around since humans were around, right? Animals, humans.
It's something we see in all species. So whatever we evolved from was doing it.
It's been a long-standing establishment. But that also led to a lot of homophobia, which meant that people who wanted to communicate with others like them had to find a way to hide it from mainstream culture. And so this language called Polari was kind of developed from several different linguistic sources. So it comes from Italian, Romani.
Polari.
It's called Polari. So it's P-O-L-A-R-I. It's also, let me find my notes. Like it's spelled a couple different ways. Polari, P-A-L-A-R-E. Or P-A-L-A-R-I, but the accepted spelling is P-O-L-A-R-I.
So perhaps the Dean Martin song Volare was originally Polare.
Could have been. Whoa. It could have been. You'll Maybe. Find that as we go through, there's a lot of words that we still use that had very different meanings. In this time.
Okay.
So we've got a language that was used primarily in the UK, particularly in the gay subculture, but you would also hear it in the subcultures of the theater and the merchant navy and the fairgrounds, anywhere where people needed to obscure what they were trying to say. So that only those that needed
before Grindr,
way before Grindr, we had Polari.
You wanted to connect with someone that was on your level, but you needed to hide yourself.
Okay, dating app right there. We could do a dating app called Polari.
Polari. Right, because you don't have that. And right. if you're going to get in trouble for just trying to get your rocks off, you need a way to do it under the radar.
They needed a way to communicate to each other that this was a safe place. I'm a safe person. You can talk to me openly. So this language developed.
So like fairgrounds and circuses and the theater, these are places you can go be amongst a crowd and chat safely all the time. And people aren't going to be like, oh, Roy sure loves the circus. They'll be like, oh, yeah, it's the circus. Right. It's awesome. A lot of people love the circus.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, this dialogue allowed gay men to recognize each other and communicate to each other, mostly. But there were actually, lesbians also used it. Anyone that was marginalized would use it to communicate.
Sure.
And it left a big mark on British culture. So it was. In the 60s, it started to kind of diminish a little bit because the need for a secret language diminished. And so today, we're able to be more open about our sexuality. And so the need for a secret language is lessened, although I have an instance we can talk about in just a little bit that came to mind just now.
Okay. Yeah. So being gay was against the law in England and most places. But once it was decriminalized in UK, I believe it was in the 60s.
Yeah, in the 60s, started about 1967-ish. So the need declined, but it was still a language that was used. So one of the most notable uses there's a BBC radio show from 1965 to 1968, called Round the Horn, H-O-R-N-E. And it featured characters named Julian and Sandy. And Julian, I listened to an hour compilation of this morning, and oh my God, it was so funny. I put the link in the episode description because it's really fun to kind of hear this language being used. And so these two characters, Julian and Sandy, would use this language of Polari in their bits. And the humor and the flamboyance of it kind of brought it into the mainstream. So it entered the mainstream culture, but still went unnoticed by the majority of people. So it's like they were revealing the secret without telling people it had been a secret.
Right. So like if you're me and you're just walking in and a couple of guys are laughing at a radio show, and I would merely be like, why was that funny? And they might explain to me what the words really mean. And I still might not get their in joke, but I might then feel like, oh, okay, well, I guess it's kind of fun.
So think about it. Like, yes, homosexuality was decriminalized, so legally it's no longer a crime. But as we still experience we still are fighting social battles to try to.
The
stigmas. Thank you. That was the word I was looking for.
The stigmas.
Right.
I mean, yeah, but Bud Light has the wrong spokesman and then people want to cancel
them. Come on, people. Like, why does it matter? Do you like the beer? Then drink it. Who cares? Anyway, I digress.
I think New Coke proved it's not about what's in the can. It's about how you market it.
Right? It is all marketing, sadly.
It's about image and branding.
Exactly. And so that ties in perfectly is image. So to appear, mainstream and appear quote unquote safe for the homophobes, this language was still used to kind of indicate that, hey, this is safe. But it also, also helped people recognize each other as, like, we're part of the same community. and it helped them navigate social spaces that would still be unfriendly. It's really hard to pinpoint like historical events because this was a secret language. So it really, a lot of anything that was recorded about it has been lost. There's not a lot of information and data that you can find out there, but there's enough to
Nobody wrote a Polari translation
manual.
Well,
interestingly enough, in more recent years, people have been, and in like in the 90s, the 1990s, there were several different people that created Polari dictionaries, or even there was one group. Let me see if I can find the name. Where to go? It was the Sisters of something or other. Where did I write it down? Oh my gosh. Oh, I don't remember. I took a whole bunch of notes this morning because it was just so interesting. The Sisters of something, I don't remember, some subversive group actually translated sections of the Bible into Polari. So yeah, look it up for me real quick. Sisters of Perpetual or Indelible, or I could probably find it. Here, let me.
Perpetual Indulgence.
Perpetual Indulgence. Oh, wow. I knew it was something fun.
The Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence is a badass
right?
name.
They were a badass group, the little bit I've gleaned. So yeah, I have a link. I'll have a link to the Polari Bible, like information about it. There's not much that you can read. You have to kind of go into the web archive in order to read most of it. There's just like a little blurb online, but for instance, to give you an example of this, let's see if you can recognize this Bible verse. I'm going to say it in Polari, of course. And Gloria Vardad the Sparkle, that it was Bona, and Gloria Medzard the Sparkle from the Munge.
Gloria Vardad the Sparkle. I feel like Verdad the Sparkle. Verdad is, it feels like viewing, watching, acknowledging.
Okay.
The sparkle, in this context of, Dan, this language is LGBTQ from the past, secret code. The sparkle, I'm going to be like, it's like the sexual interest.
Nope.
Continue.
So close.
No.
You got the Verdad is like to
the
see.
The sparkle is the gayness?
You mean you don't know your Genesis 1:4? And God saw the light, that it was good, and God divided the light from the darkness.
You know how many years I've spent trying to deprogram
purge,
my brain and strip the Bible out of it?
The Bible. Yeah, so I just thought that was really cool.
Let's keep talking about Polari. Okay, so the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence translated the Bible into Polari.
And so we've got, it's used in a lot of different ways. And some of the words have kind of become, or what am I looking for? Some of the Polari
been
words
absorbed.
Are still kind of used. They've metamorphosized into current vernacular. And you know, if you think about it, this is like this idea of a subversive movement, this subcultural communication, we still have it today. Like anybody that has heard a group of middle schoolers has probably heard them say like hot something or skibbity toilet like that. Oh my God, let me tell you, like these middle schoolers and their language.
What does skibbity toilet
mean?
You
know, I looked it up once and it didn't stick in my brain, but I was like, okay, whatever. But they have this language, right? And we all have at some point used words that maybe someone else doesn't understand. But yeah, I have the Urban Dictionary on my cell phone because I work with teenagers who often will like to try to trick their teachers into saying certain words, or they'll use their own subcultural communication to try to get around the listening ears of their teachers. So I keep Urban Dictionary on my phone for that reason.
Kids have been doing slang, to older people
exactly.
forever.
And so this is one of those instances that started in the 1800s, went into the 1900s. We don't use it as much now, but there's still some words that we do. So I have like bona, you mentioned, like a bony lassie. Bona means good. So you got that one.
Okay, I was close.
So, and bona is one of those words that, is still used and still kind of refers to something that's good.
Your bona fides.
Right. Your bona fides.
Chap.
We still have some instances of words that kind of grew from this movement. I'm trying to get back to my other.
Yeah, while you were saying that you were going to quote the Bible in Polari, I was trying to find a dictionary of Polari words.
Yeah, and there really isn't one. I'll share all the links that I found in my research, but there really isn't a huge dictionary out there. Yeah. It's kind of fun. It's a fun little language. It's a mix of Romance languages, Cockney, Yiddish, used in a lot of subcultures. So it was just really fun. Mostly associated with gay men in the mid-20th century. But was used by many others as well. So there's no like notable historical moments that we can point out, like, we can with race riots or something like that. But during police raids in the 50s and 60s on known gay venues, patrons would use Polari to communicate discreetly and avoid detection, would help them identify each other as part of the gay community and that they were, like we said, safe. It was used in social settings to discuss topics related to sexuality without drawing suspicion. It gave them a sense of privacy and safety. Sometimes, even though we don't have a lot of documented cases of it being used during legal proceedings, it is known that people who were arrested for homosexual acts would sometimes use it to communicate with each other in court or during police interrogations, to very subtly communicate with each other. So even though there's no specific events that are recorded, there's enough lore out there to give credence to the situations that it would have been used in. It was pretty cool.
You got to be pretty ballsy to be like in court.
Right?
Hey, barrister over there.
Yeah.
How you doing?
Pretty interesting stuff.
Wow, that's good stuff. All right. Well, thank you, Amber. That was some good stuff. I just learned a whole ton of stuff. Let's get back in the time machine. We got to get back to a better time when there's no reason for LGBTQ folks to hide anymore.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Wait.
Damn it.
Do we know what year we can go to for that? Because I don't know.
Anyway, all right, let's move on. Let's talk about some science news.
It's time for some news from our point of view. We'd even be glad if we could have a lap or two. It's time for some news.
All right, over in science news, the Curiosity rover was cruising around Mars. We don't know what specific mission,
it's just a
right?
Sunday
We're not
jaunt.
The NASA engineers in charge of it. It's doing its exploration and measuring shit, and it comes across some rocks that and its wheels are like, whoa, you know, what's up with this rock? Getting caught up on a rock and push the rock over. And underneath, they found sulfur crystals. Now, that might seem really mundane and boring to your average listener who doesn't know better. I didn't until I, you know, delved into the story.
It's a pretty significant finding.
These are pure sulfur, so they're bright yellow. On Earth, they form through volcanic processes where sulfur gases cool and crystallize. Okay. Or they can also form from the evaporation of really sulfur-rich water, like found in a hot spring or an evaporative basin. I don't know if you've been to the hot springs in Colorado. What were they? I forget the name of the town. But the whole town smells like sulfur. They're sulfur springs, right? I went to some hot springs in Peru once that were not sulfur, and I was like, yeah, oh, I very much prefer the non-sulfur hot springs, thank you.
A little more relaxing.
Because you go sit in them, and you get out, and you smell like sulfur. Right? Anyway. Prior to this discovery, scientists had only found sulfur on Mars in the form of sulfate and minerals that that have sulfur as part of it. Never any, like, just pure 100% crystals made of all sulfur. So those other minerals, they form chemical reactions between the sulfur and other elements, such as oxygen, typically happens in water. But
and so we could, you know, finding those, we could extrapolate that the sources of the sulfur might have come from other places, right? Like, not original to Mars, or
first of all, the rover is in the Geddes Valley's channel. Geddes Valley, maybe French. I can't pronounce it. Anyway, so that channel itself, they're pretty sure, was formed by water and an ancient water source. And finding these crystals in there backs that up.
Okay.
The water would have been transporting the sulfur from someplace else.
Got it.
So it adds to our knowledge of Mars that indeed its surface was once covered in water.
Okay.
And on top of that, Mars has experienced geological shit that caused sulfur to form, whether formed in the water or through volcanic stuff, probably volcanic. And that points to a complex chemical environment that we had been previously unaware of in Mars's past. So water and mineral interactions, volcanic interactions, gives us the fact that we found pure sulfur for the first time. It gives us a big set of new clues in the geological history of Mars and how water played a role in its past. It helps us better understand its environment and its potential to have supported life. No news on a total recall style reinvigoration of water on Mars. Like the end of that film would have been so fun to have happen.
So what if Mars used to be an Earth planet, an Earth-like planet, and global warming?
And we left for here.
Destroyed all their water. They used up all their water. They dried up. Now they're a barren wasteland.
So
I don't know. I'm just
so here's
being conspiracist.
No, you're not far off of the likelihood of what this is suggesting. Mm-hmm. And that is a planet that was very much like Earth that hit, instead of being able to continue forward and have life continue to evolve, it hit some point in its cycle where it overheated, the water evaporated, got lost to space, or it's trapped underground.
We call that global warming.
You can absolutely call that.
Yeah. So Mars is in a way a cautionary tale for what Earth could become if we're not careful.
Oh yeah, and we need to act quick.
Right. I'm tired of baking at 120 degrees.
We'll see. All right, and let's point our scientific lens backwards for a minute.
All right.
Over in Australia, in the foothills of the Victorian Alps in southeastern Australia, there's been a discovery in a place, it's known as Clogg's Cave. And they found evidence shedding light on an ancient Aboriginal ritual that's been passed down through generations over 12,000 years. 12,000
wow.
years they've been doing this.
That was a long-ass time.
Long-ass time, right? We're talking before China was even a country. You know, we're talking before the villains in the Old Testament, the Assyrians.
Right.
Yeah, this is pre-Assyria. This is long before anybody started even thinking about it.
Pretty
a Bible.
Long time ago.
Which, is, you know, I just use that because it's the oldest book
right,
people are
right,
aware of.
Absolutely.
Long before Hammurabi had a code. the cave has been inhabited by the, I can't pronounce Aborigine names, Guaynaqurnai people, holds evidence of a healing ceremony.
Ooh.
That's been meticulously preserved through oral tradition since the end of the last ice age.
Wow.
That's how long they've been doing this healing ritual.
That's incredible. How do they know that it went back that far?
Okay. So they excavated two slightly burnt sticks that had been coated in fat that were found in tiny fireplaces. They radiocarbon dated the sticks to be between 11,000 and 12,000 years
old. Wow.
Sorry, no, they found one was 11,000, one was 12,000.
Wow.
They had been fashioned from the Casuarina wood of Australia.
This is mind-boggling. Like, I can't even conceptualize that length of time. Like, that's incredible.
Well, yeah, right? You figure the average lifespan, even if you put it at a healthy 30, that's 10 generations every 300 yeah. years. That's
oh come on! In the
that's
Bible,
40
hundreds
generations
of years,
every.
Dan.
That's 40 generations every 1,200
wow.
years. So that's 400 generations.
Mind boggling. Whoa!
And they pull it off because they're still doing it today. So, the initial excavation of the Clogg's Cave was in the 70s, and they found right away they found a long extinct giant kangaroo. Bones. And they were like, holy shit.
Right?
But they did not involve or seek permission of the Aborigine
Uh-oh.
People who still lived in
Whoopsies.
The area. So
whoopsie daisy.
It's been a while since they did that. But starting in 2020, the modern excavation team has been working with the Aborigine people. And they've managed to find things like these sticks.
That is incredible.
Hopefully in a very respectful manner. Yeah. A guy named Alfred Howitt, a 19th century anthropologist. He documented the customs of the Aboriginal people. And it's a ritual known as Mulla Mulung.
Hmm.
And it involves a medicine man or medicine woman tying an object belonging to a sick person mm-hmm. to a stick smeared with fat. Either human fat or kangaroo fat. Then they stick it in the ground and light a fire under it while they chant the name of the sick person. And once the stick fell, they believed the charm was complete and it ended the ritual.
Okay.
It's profound. They say that it's profound not only for its age, but also what it represents, a continual cultural practice. Oh, and they did the math. They did the math. That survived for more than 500 generations. So I was generous in my 30 years of age. One of the co-authors of the study, Russell Mullett, is an Aboriginal elder. He emphasized that the sticks had been waiting here all this time for us to learn from them. The finding offers a unique opportunity to connect with and honor the ancestors preserving the memory and practices of one of the oldest continuous living cultures on Earth.
That is fascinating.
Stuff.
I'm going to read up on this healing ritual, maybe incorporate it into my practice.
Well, if you believe a lot of homeopathic and new age marketing, because it's so old, it must work.
I mean, there's a reason they keep doing it. Just gotta say that.
Ancient Aborigine healing secrets revealed.
Yeah, there you go. If it didn't work at least some of the time, they would not keep doing it. So I'm just saying. Oh, I know. Absolutely.
But the question is does it work? The problem is it's really tough to tell if it works. Does it work because it's a psychological cause and a psychological solution solves mm-hmm. it? Or does it work because the power of belief is that strong that your body, it can change your body and immune system into working? It can rally the troops, so to speak. Oh. We don't know. We don't study that part of it because there's no money in that.
Well, and here's the thing. Like, does it matter? Why? Like, if it works, it works. Does it matter if it's placebo or actually, you know, some sort of force that works?
Yes. To me, it absolutely matters. If it's a psychological, if you're only curing people whose symptoms have a psychological cause, then that is one mechanism. If you're curing people because the human immune system can use the placebo to rally the troops, so to mm-hmm. speak, and fix the problem that way, that's different. I want to be able to tap into that big time.
See,
I
don't know. I mean, I really do. Like, obviously, there are physical causes of our ailments. There are germs, there are bacteria, you know, I'm mm-hmm. certainly not saying that you should try to cure your strep throat with meditation and rituals.
With placebo.
But there are instances of health ailments that are helped and improved, and some could even say cured, through psychological means. I forget how you said it, but like through these kinds of rituals, the brain, I don't think we have even tapped the beginning of all of our brains, what our brains are capable of and what our spirit and soul is capable of. And so I do believe there is tremendous power in these mm-hmm. kinds of occurrences, like the rituals, the placebo effects. I don't know that the placebo effect is necessarily something that we need to look at as a detriment. If it works to get your body to send its little fighters in there to kill off that cold germ, then it works. Like, does it really matter if the end result is healing?
What I'm saying is the process of how it heals mm-hmm. matters in that if that we could pursue it as an avenue to expand the effect into a greater percentage is what I'm saying. If the placebo effect is only effective because it's only working on symptoms that had a psychological cause. Like, you might have a cold, and I might believe because we were together yesterday afternoon mm-hmm. eating lunch mm-hmm. that I've been exposed and I get a cold, and then I start feeling a sore throat. I might even get sneezes and coughs. But they're psychosomatic symptoms. A placebo would absolutely cure that. That's what I'm saying. There's no way of knowing. And it's probably a mix of both. Mm-hmm. But we're never going to see science attempt to expand the placebo effect. Like, what if we could get placebo to work 90% of the time? We're not going to see that happen.
No, but there is a lot of research that is being done and has been done on the power of our minds, of our beliefs in assisting the healing of our bodies. I will try to find some of it.
Yes,
I don't know.
Yes. You know, we were going to do something else on snake oil, but apparently it's all about placebos now.
Well, you're talking to the woo girl. So there you go.
I know. I can tell right now.
Anyway,
we're going really long. I need to get us on track, and it's time to move on to talk about some fact check.
All right. Fact-checking time. You just want to torture me.
Here we go. What do you know? It's fact checking time. Will you believe or be deceived? It's fact checking time. Cross my heart and hope to die. Stick a needle in my eye. Here's the quiz that all the kids call fact checking time.
All right, everyone, welcome to Fact Checkin' Time, the new show quiz that tests your ability to tell the difference between a news story and something that the media is actually deemed worthy of a true fact check. I'm here in the Half Cocktails Lounge with the amazing Amber. My sister loves the woo-woo, thinks she's always right, too. Amber, how are you doing today?
Fantastically tired.
Well, good. That puts you in good company because you are playing for Poncho Cat,
yay!
The sleepy co-host of the Half Cocktails New Shorts. And whether you win or lose decides whether he gets wet or dry food for dinner.
So much pleasure.
So now let's get to the game. I'm going to present to you a series of events or stories that were in the news or on social media, but only one of them has been fact-checked by a media outlet. The articles, social media posts, interview quotes, but only some of them have been fact-checked. And
right.
You will have 1 minute to ask me questions, and I will do my best to answer them.
All right.
1 minute on the clock. Either all-you-can-eat shrimp at Reb Lobster is what drove the company into bankruptcy from the losses of people eating too many shrimp. Or in Colorado, an orange lobster was rescued by the staff of a Red Lobster restaurant because they're all Denver Broncos fans, and it was the perfect shade of orange.
Oh, my God. So from past knowledge, I know that both of these stories are true, or at least have been put out there. Not necessarily true, but both are stories. I mean, the Broncos thing tracks. Like, you don't mess with a football fan. That totally tracks.
Broncos fans love
their
orange.
I mean, just football fans in general. As a football fan, I that tracks. But which would the media fact check? I am going to say that they're still going to fact check. They're going to fact check the lobster. I don't have any questions. I'm just going for it. Lobster.
The saving the orange,
yes,
lobster. Oh, I'm sorry. They fact checked the bankruptcy.
Damn, you derailed me with football.
I did.
Stinker.
I did. Sorry. It was actually part of the story. Okay, so Red Lobster did file bankruptcy protection on May 19th of this year.
Because people are eating too many shrimp.
So it was fact checked as false.
Okay.
It was not the reason they went bankrupt. But they did famously lose $11 million on offering the endless shrimp.
Oof.
In 2023. But
shrimp.
That was only part of the $76 million in losses they had that
so it was like a seventh of their losses. Am I remembering the numbers right? That's funny.
Yes, you are, and your math is
all
correct.
You shrimp lovers out there, look what you did.
They were stuck with inflation pressure, wage pressure, because wages have been trying to go up. And on top of that, people are going out to eat less,
right,
because they're getting delivery more.
That's
and
true.
I guess people aren't getting their lobster DoorDash.
Yeah, I haven't DoorDashed any lobster or shrimp. I mean, I don't eat them either, but that might be why.
other people point to the company in 2014. Their parent company, Darden Restaurants, sold them to Golden Gate Capital, a private equity firm. And they say that it's Golden Gate Capital's management that drove them into the ground.
Sounds we'll like it.
Then, yes, in Colorado, Pueblo, Colorado, a guy was unpacking the lobsters, and this one was bright orange. And so he took it to the manager. They were all Denver Broncos fans. And the manager was like, oh, no, we're not selling this guy. And as a testament to how much they love the Denver Broncos, the Downtown Aquarium in Denver has taken the lobster in. It's now in the aquarium.
He got an upgrade.
Yeah.
That's so funny. I love it.
You know, hashtag only pretty lobsters. The ugly lobsters got eaten, for the record here.
I mean, you gotta stand out.
Yeah.
That's the moral of that story.
Okay.
To survive, you gotta stand out. All right.
Next fact.
All right. I got my loss out of the way.
All right. Either, despite over $1 billion in damages, CrowdStrike's user agreement shields them from any liability. The famous CrowdStrike outage that went down this week. Or the CrowdStrike outage caused the Sphere in Las Vegas, the big giant dome with the LED screens, to show the Windows blue screen.
The blue screen of death?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Okay. So I am minimally familiar with CrowdStrike. What is CrowdStrike?
CrowdStrike is a cybersecurity firm that pushed an update this week that took down a whole ton of infrastructure.
Oh, yeah. It's been a
including,
shit show online.
Airports, hospitals.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Any business or corporation that used CrowdStrike for their cybersecurity, it took their whole system down.
Okay. All right. Review the first choice with me again. I just got lost in the really funny blue screen.
Despite over $1 billion in damages, their user agreement that you click, that you have to read through to accept, protects them from all liability.
I'm going to say they fact-checked the liability.
No, incorrect. God, they fact-checked the Sphere.
Oh. They, why? That didn't need to be fact-checked.
They fact-checked the Sphere.
Just look up and see it.
And it didn't happen. It didn't happen. The Sphere did not go down because of CrowdStrike.
Media.
At all.
Back to this media question. Yeah. Damn it, Poncho. I'm so sorry. Can I get double points for the next one if I win?
All right.
Oh, no.
All right. Sure, but you have to also tell me whether it was true, false, or mixed.
Oh, okay. All right, Poncho, maybe we'll redeem you. Finish up. Yeah.
Yes. CrowdStrike is not expected to have to pay a dime.
Of course not.
For them taking down half the world.
Of course not.
Okay.
Like, why would we hold anyone responsible for what they do anymore?
Either. The only time Joseph Smith of the Mormon Church fame was ever found guilty of a crime was for assaulting a tax collector. Was that fact checked? Or Joseph Smith of the Mormon Church fame was the first presidential candidate to be assassinated. Which was fact-checked?
Oh, Poncho. I owe you big time, Poncho. This one's hard. And I know he was a presidential candidate. I know he was assassinated. Mm-hmm. I don't think those two things were close together. They might have been. I'm not real strong on my dates.
It did happen. He was assassinated in 1844, right when they were developing Polari in England.
Interestingly enough. And the Mormon church had its own secret language, too. So, lots of ties together today.
20 seconds left.
What was the first Joseph Smith did what?
The only crime he was guilty of was for assaulting a tax collector.
I am going to say the tax collector story. Well, no, wait. Which one would be fact checked? Okay, I am going to say that they fact-checked the presidential story, And
the one about being the candidate assassinated.
The yes.
First candidate.
First assassinated okay. candidate. And I am going to say that that story is, it was found true.
Hold on. True, false, or mixture?
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm going to say that it was found to be true.
Okay. You are correct Whew. In that that was the fact check story.
Okay.
However, it was found to be a mixture.
A mixture, okay. So I got half of it right. So you get half a bowl of wet
It's a
food.
Mixture.
Poncho.
It's a mixture because, yes, he was technically a presidential right. candidate, but not on a national stage.
Right, yeah, no. In
so,
his own
so it's like Kanye West was technically a presidential candidate.
Great comparison, the two of
and
them,
the fact,
for sure.
And the fact that he was assassinated, but he was not assassinated because he was a president.
No, no, he was not. That
so
was
they
not.
Rated it as a mix because right. of that. They're like, well,
that makes sense, yeah.
Technically,
I mean,
yes,
he was assassinated. But, he was a presidential candidate, but the two are not linked.
right, right, right. Correlation and causation are not
right,
aligned in
right,
this.
Right, right. And then the first one, the crime against a tax collector.
Oh, yeah. So this was apparently the an arm of the Mormon Church has released a book, an e-book called the Joseph Smith Papers.
Oh, yes.
And they've pieced together the 200 legal cases where he was plaintiff, defendant, witness, or judge.
Holy fuck.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah.
That man, I'm telling you.
And the story was on churchnews.com, so it's very favorable to
and
Joseph
just a
Smith
smidge.
And the Mormon Church.
A little bit of bias there.
And yeah. So they're like, yeah, the only time he was ever found guilty mm-hmm. of a crime, according to the church history department, was this tax collector was not treating Mormons right and overcharging them for taxes.
Oh,
and he was such a just mm-hmm. man. He leapt down from mm-hmm. his carriage and beat the tax
yeah,
collector.
Because that is what a Christ-like person does. Yes.
And, well, Christ whisked the money changers. So
oh, that's true.
That tracks.
That's true.
Now, this was very deliberate, Amber. This was very deliberate. They know what they're doing at the church history department.
Yeah, they spin very well.
Guess what he did right now? Guess what he did next? Right away. He just gets done pounding this guy into the ground, walks right into the sheriff's department and goes, hey, I'm sorry, man. I just committed a crime. Apologies. You're going to have to arrest me. I don't want to be arrested, but I just had to kick this guy's ass. He was overcharging everybody for taxes.
I had to do it.
And
just
so
had
I
to.
Had to do it. I had to do it.
He, just like he had to do Fanny out behind the barn.
Look, God told me to fuck the 14-year-old.
All right. Wait, we're not talking about Trump.
She started menstruating 2 years ago. 2 years, Amber.
Yeah, wait.
A woman.
Yeah, no. I mean,
good Lord.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, there's a little bit of bias on this show, too. Well, let's admit.
I openly have a scientific bias on this show. I don't. It shouldn't be news to anybody that I will deride
the Mormon Church.
I will absolutely deride every religion that relies on chicanery, charlatanism, and the supernatural as a source of knowledge.
Right.
Ugh. Anyway, I won't be sharing the link to this story.
That's fantastic.
Because if you scroll down after it, the very next one is Come Follow Me for July 22nd to 28th. What have church leaders said about Alma 32 through 35? This week's study guide. Blah, blah,
Ugh,
blah. Yeah,
I think I will take shit. A hard pass on that one.
Yeah, you don't want me to keep going?
No, I'm not.
Anyway.
I mean, I will trust you and trust what you say. It's
get back to my script. All right. Sorry, Poncho.
Dang it.
She didn't get the bonus points.
Poncho.
She only got half a bonus point. I'll tell you what
Poncho.
I'll do. I'll run. This used to work for the Dachshunds. I'll run his dry food under the tent.
I don't think it really works that well for cats. I could be wrong. I think they're a little too particular. But try it. Let me know. I'm sorry, Poncho. I'll make it up to you. I promise.
Join us next week where either I will dance with a unicorn or get danced on by a unicorn.
Oh, that's right. We were supposed to have chickens this week. What happened?
You know what? That was in the pre-show. Did you miss that? Oh, wait. I think chicken is Polari slang for something. Yes. A young man or boy.
Wow. Oh, the theme of this show. I'm a little scared we should end it before we get even worse.
What's Polari? What does unicorn mean in Polari? Okay, they don't have one. All right. Let's talk about some feel good news and wrap
up
the show.
Let's do.
A gulp or a sip, maybe even a hit, and join us for half cocked.
Okay, all right. A 60-year-old German man has become the 7th person in the world to be considered cured of HIV.
Wow.
HIV affects 39 million people in the world.
Wow.
1.2 in the U.S.
You probably know someone, folks, just saying.
So here's the crazy thing about this one. The guy that got cured through a stem cell donation, mm-hmm. The person that donated the stem cells was not considered immune to the virus.
Oh.
So we've talked about the stem cell and bone marrow transplants, like one in your 7 people in a million have a natural immunity. And they've been taking that. But this they don't know. Like they're like, this is surprising. We don't know where this came from.
These were just stem cells that worked.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So he tested positive for HIV in 2009, got diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia in 2015, which prompted the team in Berlin to give him the stem cell transplant. And the patient stopped antiviral therapy in 2018. No cancer cells have been detected. Functional system. And they've observed him as being HIV virus free for 5 years now.
Wow. So this was tangential.
Yes.
He actually was being treated for leukemia, but also cured his HIV.
Yes.
That is astounding.
The doctors said the considerable risks that are associated with this stem cell transplant makes it not suitable for most HIV infections.
Wow.
But this is the first case of remission in which the stem cell donor had a single rather than double CCR delta 32 mutation. It's the double mutation that causes the immunity.
That's incredible.
And
it gives them so many avenues for research now to try to cure HIV specifically.
I mean, I'm sure my brain is making it overly simplistic, but I'm like, if they had one side and the other guy had the other side and they paired, I don't know.
That is so fascinating.
So the doctor is conjecturing the speed with which the new immune system replaces the old one may have an influence.
Wow.
because basically what they're trying to do in the leukemia thing, swap immune systems. In the second Berlin patient, this was completed relatively quickly in less than 30 days. Perhaps the donor's immune system also had special properties such as particularly active natural killer cells, which ensure that even low levels of HIV actively are recognized.
They're not really sure why yet, but that is fabulous.
But 5 years without any treatment is a long time to
go
with a virus
in
remission.
Absolutely.
So kudos to that German man. And I really, this is one of those things like sulfur on Mars, where all of a sudden they go, oh, wait, it's not quite what we thought.
Mm-hmm.
And it expands the paradigm and lets them look in different directions. Yeah. Go science.
Yay, space science. Huzzah.
All right. Sadly, though, we got to bring the show to an end. We're going really long. Before we go, I'd like to thank Bloaty's Pizza Hog.
Mm-hmm.
We know you're too lazy to cook.
You do make me bloat every time. Very accurate name.
Looks like we just don't have any time left for the disgusting new trend that lifeguards cannot stand.
Shoot.
Sorry, folks, that's on me.
Well, I don't have any trips to the ocean late scheduled, so that's okay.
Or I will also accept a large pool.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, that's true. They have, lifeguards too.
I need to give a shout out to Science, Congeniality, and the Social Contract, making society better than anarchy for many of the last thousands of years. Amber, any final words, thoughts, or phrases before we say goodbye?
Oh, gosh, put me on the spot. Like I haven't been on the spot the entire time, right? I don't know, just have a bone a week.
Have a bone a week. Bona indeed. Have a wonderful day, folks. If you had a good time with us today, you know what to do. Tell somebody that needs to hear us. You can find us over at halfcocktails.com on TikTok, YouTube, Instagram. If you're in a giving mood, please come show your support over at Patreon. We'll have all those links in the episode description. You can also check us out at halfcocktails.com/shop for some cool branded merchandise, including, Amber, we sell snake oil there. Yeah. Yeah, we're selling the actual snake oil you can buy from us. Get our snake oil. It's the best snake oil.
Hey, I'll have to give it a shot. Add it to my ritual.
There you go. There you go. Thanks for stopping by, everybody. Now go out and be well.
Have a great week.
Now things are ending. It's time to go. No more to get through. Thanks for listening. That's our show. Ain't affectation. Oh, we're just leaving you half-cocked. 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 Had a good time talking today, but even best times eventually they fade away. Ain't adjuration, oh, we're just leaving half-cocked.